The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so I think we're back. And so Sharon, can you see the different view now?
Wider view?
Yeah, do you want to, what would you prefer? Zooming in on me, or you prefer the wider view?
Zooming in on you.
Okay.
Thanks.
Okay. I just wanted to give you a little sense of the room. So just to see what we hear, but you don't see that much, but you get a little sense of what's going on.
Thank you.
Great. So let's do a short meditation, and the purpose of which is that I'm going to drop a question into the meditation for you all. And I like to think of these as contemplative questions. And what I mean by that is that you don't have to answer them with the usual thinking mind. In fact, you don't have to have any words to answer them at all, but there might be. And if your mind does think about an answer, that's okay too. But there might be some other response inside to the question. There might be a feeling, an emotion, some kind of other reaction or response. It might be an image that arises. So almost anything. So a contemplative question means you take it in and allow something to respond that might not be the usual response. Like especially that wouldn't be the place where certainly there's a right answer to this question. And I have to figure out the right question so I can get an A. This is really for your own sake. It's kind of a process of self-discovery more than an answer for anybody else. So take a meditation posture. And in your way, sit quietly, being available to learn, to register, to take in, to be transformed by your present moment experience. Your job is to show up and be present for the experience and to be available for your experience to somehow change you for the better. How do you respond? How do you be present? How do you receive yourself, your experience of the moment in a beneficial way? So we'll sit quietly for a while with that question. So then as we continue, here's a question. In terms of you offering chaplaincy, offering spiritual care, what might be your deepest aspiration for doing so? The deepest or the most intimate aspiration that you can, that you know of. What is your deepest intention in regards to chaplaincy? In coming to do this chaplaincy training, what is your heart responding to? What inspires you to be interested in spiritual care? And finally, consider if there is something that came up for you in these questions, that if you had one sentence or so to say what that is, what would that sentence be? And then to end this sitting, I'll offer each of you a deep bow instead of the bell. Thank you. So I'm wondering if any of you would be willing to share your sentence or share a response of your aspiration for chaplaincy, your intention, your heart's calling, whatever came up. Anybody willing to share that?
I guess my sentence would be mainly company on the journey. So my idea was leaning more along the lines of hospice and providing some company and some support for people, especially on the toughest part of the journey.
So your wish is to provide company and accompaniment, companionship for people, and kind of be more a peer or equal and in that way.
Yes.
Yeah, and it's a beautiful thing. I really love it. But what is it about you that inspires that to be that way?
I guess it's through experience in my work, especially in medicine. You see people kind of on every part of this same path that we're all on, and realizing that a lot of people really don't have that companionship. Especially toward the end, there may not be something can come in and somebody can come in and fix. It's just a really tough part of the journey, and I think it can be very helpful and very healing for them to have some companionship in that stretch, and a lot of people don't have that companionship.
I find myself touched by what you're saying, what your wish is. Maybe partly because of your profession. It seems like such a big difference, because in your profession, you're not in a profession where we usually think you're accompanying someone.
Right.
You're the authority, you're the one who provides and the answers and all that. So is there something about the, you know, what you spent your life as a career doing that inspires this?
Yeah, I think I see this as a blind spot in medicine, in large part. Yeah. So I've just witnessing that, it just seems like a good way of turning one of the rearview mirrors on that blind spot and seeing it and going there and being helpful in that space that I think the medical community, in a lot of senses, fails.
And are you doing this mostly for your own sake or for the sake of the people you're accompanying?
I would say ultimately both,
because
I think we're all on the same path. And I feel connected to them, and I don't see myself being able to help them to a great degree without helping myself. Uh-huh. And I think it's a mutual experience.
And how do you help yourself in this regard? How are you helped?
I feel like it's just a natural sharing of the positive that comes out of that. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's something I arrange or obtain. I think it's just having successful and deeply felt communion with somebody in these situations is just mutually beneficial naturally, and I just kind of trust that that's will continue and that's what will happen.
And from your point of view, it's happening for you. What's that experience like for you? What happens to you in that experience?
Somehow, in the best part of it, I tend to kind of forget myself. Uh-huh. And and I feel like that's when I tend to be at my best, when I've just kind of forgotten what agenda or what I may be seeking in that moment and just kind of giving myself to the person in the moment. For some reason, that's just uplifting for me and energizing, I would say.
Fantastic. I love hearing this, but it strikes me also that what a different thing it is to be interested in forgetting yourself. I mean, that's not what we're supposed to do in this society. How did you end up this way, that you like that so much?
Well, I think conceptualizing ourselves and identifying with certain identities has, in the long run, led to more walls between people than highways. And I think that there's the possibility of a naturally felt, and I would come back to the word communion with people, that we have a shared experience that can be experienced if we try not to live up to or create or adhere to conceptions and identities so much.
And that sense of communion for you is really important, really a valuable part of who you are, or part of what you think is maybe almost sacred or of ultimate value.
Yeah. I think it has, and I think there's kind of a natural course here through going direction, through going through basically a lot of the classes and participation in IMC, actually. I mean, I just naturally have felt that way more progressively as I've gone through practice.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing all that. I loved it. Someone else willing or would like to share their sentence or... Yes, please.
This inspiration has been formless for a long time, but recently distilled into a sentence, borrowing from Lin-Manuel Miranda in Hamilton, which is a yearning to be in the room where transformation happens. And that just sort of landed on my heart.
Wow, that's cool. That's a great sentence. Yearning to be where transformation happens. And how do you think you came to... How is it you've come to appreciate that desire? Where did that come from in you? Is it a hard one? Or was that kind of... You think you were born that way?
No, somewhere in between. Not exactly. I mean, it doesn't feel born with, and it doesn't feel... It feels less and less like a credential of some sort. It mostly feels like it's associated with letting go of accumulated knowledge. The role of being an authority. Been being employed as a helper. And trusting more in the power of authenticity that doesn't have a center.
So I love the quote you provided. I am also wondering if you're maybe willing to... Could you say it in your own words? As pithy.
Um. Well, when you were speaking this morning about wisdom of self and other, it's distinct from wisdom of self or wisdom of other. That was, even though I was a moment of painfully split attention, trying to drive in a downpour without coming too close to other. And being with the journey implicit in your words, that's the first thing that comes to mind. Yeah. I don't know if I have my own words for that. I have to look around in the attic and see. Great, see what I can dust off.
Well, yeah, I value what you're saying, the words, but I value more the sentiment that's coming out of sitting here and what you're expressing kind of from your heart or some deeper thing.
Yeah.
It seems like this aspiration you have to be in the place of transformation is transformative for you. It's nourishing for you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And,
For example, I received a, and there was a very strong experience of that, listening to the facilitator, former inmates, who Kim brought to the session in here. I could just feel in them the resonance of real journey, you know, real, honest, hard, authentic, heartful journey. And that was really compelling.
Nice. And the fact that something in you resonates with that or responds to that gives me a lot of confidence in you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So, anyone else? I'd love to hear your sentence.
Something that's been interesting for me this morning is the last few weeks I've been feeling a little lost and lower self-confidence, and through the first exercise and then now this exercise around intention, I feel like I've reconnected with my heart and so at first I was feeling this aspiration to share my heart with others and connect with them in that way. And it was this very tender and immediate felt experience. And then the last question that you asked, which I'm forgetting now, but the what came up for me was it's my heart that wants to be met by others, and I was kind of surprised by that turn. Like, it felt like something that I was giving, and then it came back to something that I longed to receive.
Thank you. It's been clear to me in my way of perceiving, if that's accurate, that since I first met you, that you have a beautiful heart. I wonder if you don't always remember that.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it can be easy to get kind of lost in... just to get lost, kind of caught up in things or narratives of self-doubt.
Yeah, it's easy to do. What do you love the most about your heart?
It's always there, and it always longs to connect. Like it's always kind of like it's always right.
Nice. And so you like that always ready, always wanting. That's something you love.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's and the challenge is remembering to connect with that, or to feel like that's accessible or possible.
Yeah, the other half of it is it okay with others to do that?
Mm-hmm.
That everyone's right. Available for that.
Yeah, yeah, and that kind of guardedness, that pulling back, like, can I? A whole lifetime of questioning. Can I be open right now?
That's fantastic. I love hearing this. That this is what your wish. Do you have support for that in your life? What kind of support do you have for it?
Some deeply loving people who bring that forward and spaces where it feels safe to do that, and where I feel inspired by seeing other people come forward and. I feel invited into that, and yeah, and I have felt that here today.
Great, well, thank you very much. So, thank you, all of those of you who spoke, and I would have loved to hear from all of you, but there's not time for it. And now we're going to switch and kind of change modes. And what did you just witness? What happened here in these conversations with the last three people? Not much, I guess. So if you take the mic, if you don't mind, please.
I think I witnessed the deepest desires and authentic feelings of where they like to go with the chaplaincy program. It's something very sacred. I don't run into experiences very often where people like this sangha here, where they are willing to share the feelings which are the deepest longing. So,
great, thank you.
Thank you.
And can you choose a direction to pass it, the mic? Can you choose a direction for passing the mic?
I think what I saw may not be exactly. It was with everyone who spoke, you kind of like pressed them a little bit on the like spoken statements they had.
Can you get a little closer?
Yeah, with everybody who spoke, I felt like you pressed them a little bit and like looked to push past the like spoken words and like the stated like, this is what I'm doing, and to see deeper and to say like, well, where does that come from? Like, what exactly does that mean? So I think a little bit of like applied wisdom practice. But, yeah, that's what I saw. Kind of making sure everybody understands what's at the the core of what they're doing.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, just how beautiful how beautiful it is to hear the deep heart intention of people, and how rare that is. And I was also kind of admiring and taking mental notes of your questions and guiding people into greater depth.
Great, thank you. Maybe. What did you observe? It could be anything. It could be something. What did you witness?
I just add to Sage's comment. It's like reflective listening. But I think there's a term, spiritual something listening, where you not trying to lead the conversation, but just go deeper, whether the, you know, the person, where they want to go, and noticing what's underlying their words. 'Cause a lot of time I'm not aware of what my expression, the words that I'm using, and so it's helpful when this person who is listening is being very discernful about it and help me interpret my the meaning behind my words.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic, thank you. Oh, maybe, okay, you're kind of, we just skipped you by mistake. The way you're situated in the circle, for that, the group, is different than for me. So maybe would one of you like to say what you witnessed or heard?
I could go.
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
I don't want to be booming. I'm tearing up. That was really meaningful. And I also had just reread one of the readings for today about the different, you know, kinds of ways to respond or ask questions and intervene in the, not intervene isn't the right word, but I had this sort of really good relationship with this reading, and then I just saw you do it. So part of my mind was sort of identifying, oh, that's one of those, that's a summarization, that's a, you know. So I was going through the different, because the exercise asks you to identify those things, but at the same time, that sort of intellectual side of it and trying to learn, it wasn't impeded by trying to learn. Like, it was just kind of there. But I just felt so much love for, like, the whole, the, you know, the responses and the way that you ask the questions and just for the whole enterprise. And I just felt, I feel so much just love for this this endeavor. Just all of it. And it was wonderful to be able to be trying to learn something, but not have to compartmentalize in my head. You know, my heart never shut down while I was trying to learn.
Nice.
And that was a new experience for me. I'm usually one or the other. But so that was, and that kind of went back to this morning, was like, what are your impediments to learning? And I was like, oh, that just happened. So it seems so effortless. And that's, you know, really masterful. Things often seem effortless. And that was just a masterful coming together of all of it.
Great, thank you. And Sharon?
I think the first thing I want to note is appreciation for the courage of the people who volunteered to speak from their heart. I feel transformed when I witness that or participate in that. And so I'm very grateful. I think it's one of our most profound ways to heal. And then I also want to say that, Gil, I found you to be relaxed and curious and like you had questions, but you didn't have an agenda, if you can understand that. So I appreciated witnessing that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, I agree with what a lot of people have said here already about the deft use of questioning and going deeper. And I think there's really a kind of an art to that, figuring out from what is spoken, what things have more room to go deeper into. So decisions were made as far as what further questions, what directions it would go. But I'd also like to point out there was, I thought, very good use of some things besides the questions, and strategically placed. I think there was acknowledgement, sometimes repetition, and sometimes you kind of paraphrased some things that were expressing what was being expressed. There was also encouragement and also some validation. So I think those were actually very powerful in putting a person at ease that, hey, I'm on the right track, and I'm actually feeling better about this. And knowing they're feeling better, they may come out with more. They may dig deeper and feel more comfortable expressing more. So very, very well done.
Thank you.
Yeah, agreed. Just everything that everyone has said. And it was, not only were you doing all that, but it seems so effortless. And gentle, you know. I just was really impressed with that. And as usual, I'm really inspired and impressed by everyone's really authentic, honest, and vulnerable sharing here. You know, it's rare in our everyday lives. So I so appreciate it from all of you.
I think it's empowering to feel seen, heard, and invited to experience being safe. And I think those are conditions that sort of draw out expansion of authentic connection.
Thank you.
Thinking about a couple things, actually. I had, at some point last year, I had a teacher say to me that we're all just kind of swimming in love and qualities of love, and we just have to have people point out the ones that we're not seeing. And my experience with Gil questioning the cohort, I was watching the different ways that everyone showed their love languages. And from that, and thinking about learning experiences, I feel like I could adopt other people's love languages if I can see them. So if I could see them, if I could have them pointed out to me. Yeah.
Very nice. Thank you.
I feel like I saw a lot of, or want to reiterate and affirm a lot of what everyone else is saying about how skillfully you explored with everyone their heart's intention. And I want to express my gratitude for this space because everyone here is doing that deep work and are able to access parts of their heart that are so uncommon in day-to-day life. Like, a lot of people are unwilling, even like the chaplaincy volunteer work I'm doing or in my vocation, people have a real difficult time putting down the conceptual mind and just kind of getting to their heart and their truest intention. And that people here can have the capacity to go there. And so that's a gift. And one of the things I saw Gil do, and I love doing this, especially doing it more lately, kind of telling people you love or in close relationship with how and why you love them. And it's kind of a deeply uncomfortable thing. I've been doing a lot of death contemplation. And the only two times we'll tell people what we admire about them is when they get married and when they're dead, publicly. And really, like, and so telling someone like your parent, like, God, I love you, and this is so much for these reasons. And they kind of shrink away from it. And it's just something I've noticed, and that to see that, witness it, and we have the space and capacity. Yeah, it's a gift. I'm very thankful for it. And the other part, you know, if we use the chaplaincy model of like space, what's going on here, what's going on there, and the trying to contain my enthusiasm and be like, no, don't pick up, don't pick up the bike, like let other force other people to go. And so having that preponderance of enthusiasm and happiness for just being here. So thank you.
So for me, I interpreted what you were doing to be almost like paradoxical, because although you're gentle, you're also really sharp in drawing out, like, it's like the mind is dodging what is trying to answer you in answering truest intention, and you're able to like cut away it all. It was a bit gruesome when imagery, but like that's what it felt like to me. It was like there's a certain sharpness, and it's like you do have an agenda, but the of helping the other person discover their intentions, but the agenda seems aligned with the other person's agenda. So then I feel like that is the art of the non-agenda agenda that's happening as well.
Great. I loved hearing what you had to say about that. Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that's it. Elisa, do you still want to pass? Okay. So, so one of the tools of a chaplain in the big toolbox of so many different things is asking questions, is engaging in different kinds of conversations than most people have. Many people don't have anyone in their life to have spiritual conversations with or existential conversations with or things of the heart that are most important for them. And for some people, they're willing to open up to someone who's as unusual and out of the normal kind of flow of roles and everything, they're willing to open up to a chaplain. You know, so even just giving people a chance to talk about their religiosity and what's spiritually important for them, some people will thrive in being able to share what they do. And you can ask questions like, you know, how do you experience God? Oh, you're a Christian, and how do you experience God? And that might be a question that opens up the door. It might be a question that opens no door at all, and probably not too much is lost by asking that. And some of these might be just a matter-of-fact theological discussion. You know, it might be more in the head, because that's how the person connects. They're not going to connect from the heart, but they love the fact, maybe even they love the real intellectual exploration of, you know, if they, you're Buddhist, you must be a meditator, and what do you think consciousness is? And you go along, you know, and that's, you know, but they're having a conversation they don't usually have with people, and something going on. And so being available for these deeper conversations and that people, and then participating, and then knowing how to ask questions. And that's the skill that I want to pass on today, is the question, the skill of asking questions. And now, when you ask questions, especially from the role of a chaplain or a Buddhist teacher, you are coming from a position of power and authority. And so the fact that you're accepting and you're asking, you're spacious and you're kind and you're, there's an extra level that you might not see. Is there, you're an authority figure. So when you ask, it's like really important. Like it's like serious now. Uh-oh, now I have to, this is like almost like, I'm answering to God now. So I better really, and so you have to be clear, be careful about whether it's okay to ask questions, because some people it's not. Some people find it very intrusive and very much, almost violent even, because you're probing into their life and probing into themselves. So you have to kind of feel whether you have permission, whether it seems okay. And in this context, in chaplaincy, in the roles that I have and what we're studying here, by the time we're here in December, January, I felt like I had enough permission, to go along and do this. So if I didn't, I apologize. But you have to be, and so this is a particular format I could do what I did. But so you have to, don't hold this up as the model. But there is opportunity to ask questions, and it can be very simple questions, like I ask Kay, who supports you? Do you have do you have a church? Oh, that's your, and then how you respond to something, if someone says, yes, oh, I have a church, I go every Sunday, and they might say it matter-of-factly, and so you might say, okay, that's a lost opportunity. By saying, oh, wow, that's really wonderful. That's great. You're lucky. Many people don't have a church. Now you're infusing the conversation with an attitude, an inspiration, an appreciation, with some positive slant on what's going on. And that might make a huge difference for the person you're with. Maybe they're sinking, despairing. And it's not like you're manipulating people. You're trying to prepare them to be better able to be present for their life and what it is. But you can ask questions that can bring out the positive, bring out what inspires them, that's meaningful for them, that's something they've long forgotten. Someone has forgotten about their good heart. And so maybe it's there, so then you can, So you ask questions that kind of bring that out and inspire people. So there's a little bit of an agenda, for sure. But to have an agenda that you don't have to go, it doesn't have to work out. It's almost like anything they respond is the next thing to be with and meet. Don't hold on to an agenda, an idea of what's supposed to happen. But some of your questions, some of your comments even, might be meant to be onward leading, meant to make a connection. You go into the room in the hospital and someone, you say, I'm the chaplain, and they go, ah. But they're watching football on TV. And you say, oh, cool. Who's winning? Is this a team that you like? And then now you're, you're with some enthusiasm, you're connecting with what they're doing, as opposed to like saying, oh, well, this person doesn't want a chaplain. Human connection about football. And there was one chaplain I knew who had a very wonderful visit with someone watching the football game, sharing that together. And some of you might know that there are some people in our society, it's often associated with men, that they'll share when they're doing something different. Like my wife told me, if you really want to talk to your son, just go play a baseball catch with him. And it'll come out. So this direct approach sometimes isn't always the thing to do. So there's a whole slew of questions. I think on the website there's that document that AJ pointed to. You can get a sense of them. Um, Sometimes what's interesting is to keep an eye out for if someone says something in the negative. Like, for example, you ask, what's your deepest intention? And they say, to live without fear. You know, that's a negative intention, but the absence of something. So great, great, that's a great thing to do. And then you say, and if you were living without fear, what would be your intention then? And, then what I want to do is love. And then you could say, I mean, maybe more carefully than I'm about to say, but why don't you just go directly to the love then? What if you jump over the fear? You know, and maybe, you know, tap into that. That's there in you as well. Don't overlook it. Maybe it's there as a resource, as a support. So sometimes kind of listening to what they have to say and reframing it. Oh, in that case, it's different, you know. I see it this way, or let's reframe it in a positive, or let's reframe it in terms of what supports you. They're talking about what drains them. And so you reframe it by, oh yeah, that's something, and how do you, what supports you? So there's all these questions. So that's the chaplaincy skill. And so now you get a chance to practice it with each other. And I hope that you give each other permission. Each of you will be a chaplain, and I hope you give each other permission to for the chaplain to take some risks, kind of, you know, experiment and, you know, try a little bit. Hopefully this is a safe environment that you don't have to, it's not someone in their hospital bed, you know, be, love the person, respect the person you're with, the chaplain, but take some risks, and maybe if you don't quite do it right, you'll learn more. Both of you will learn more than if it was perfect. When you're yourself in the role, just be yourself. And so what I'd like to suggest as a way is, why don't you, when you're yourself, the chaplain is there with you, and the chaplain will ask, you know, how are you? And don't just say fine. Share something that's a challenge for you these days, something that you're struggling with. You don't have to go into a lot of detail. You don't know this chaplain after all. I mean, is it safe to say something to this person? So you just say something very simple, you know, like, you know, that, I have a relative who's really sick. And then as a chaplain, your job is to engage that and have a conversation with that person, that with whatever the opening they provided, and let's assume they're open to this conversation. Don't role play the difficult person. You'd be open, and then let the chaplain kind of ask questions or make comments or offer, say things, or whatever the chaplain wants to do. But maybe part of your job as a chaplain is to go a little bit deeper with the person. So have a relative who's sick, and then find out more deeply, like, you know, something deeper about the person, like what's your spirituality, or what's your spiritual understanding of illness, or what supports you, or what's your hopes, or what is it about being challenged that is really important for you, that underneath it all. So you have to figure out, as chaplain, you have to figure out how to take the conversation and what's supportive and helpful for the person who shared this with you. You'll have about 7 or 8 minutes each. I'll ring a bell so you can switch over, and then you can switch roles, and then we'll come back for a few minutes to debrief, and we'll end at 12:30. So any questions about that? You might want to stand up and mill around a little bit, and then find yourself with a buddy. And I think it'll be one group of three. Those of you down in the Zoom land, you can walk around your chair a little bit and come back. So that was lovely to sit in the room and witness that. Thank you. And the voice and the sights and sounds were wonderful. And on Zoom, the sights were wonderful. And this was an exercise for chaplaincy skills. So as a chaplain, or maybe as a recipient of chaplaincy, what did you learn about chaplaincy in this exercise? Did anything come out for you? Did you push the limit, did you take some risks to try something out, or what did you learn?
So I felt I need to learn how to balance reflecting and discovery, because I felt like I was very eager to implement what I had seen you do. But then I was like, but I felt like I was like really digging at something, and it was like very motivational interviewing style, but I was like not reflecting enough.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but it turns out my self-assessment was wrong, and that wasn't really evident that I was doing that. So I think there's like multiple things that are going on where my self-assessment of what I'm doing needs to be calibrated with the other person through asking questions. Uh-huh. to verify.
Yes. One of the questions to ask someone you're working with is it okay to ask some questions? Or I've asked some questions now. Is that enough now, or should we? Or is it okay to continue? Did you raise your hand before?
I was feeling the edge of. Like, what if I don't have any questions? And I found that just by sort of setting that aside and just feeling into the sort of the directness of what's being communicated, it wasn't an obstacle. Like all kinds of things came up that were chaplain-like questions. Just basically by
so asking questions as a policy doesn't work.
Yeah,
but showing up and being available,
Or in improv language, you know, taking the offer.
Take a.
Taking the language of improv,
yeah. Yeah.
Is just taking the offer of what, yeah. Of what the person actually offers you. You know, as soon as you,
I mean,
you can literally start with, you know, how are you, and they'll offer you something, yeah. And there's actually a valid question in there, or a dozen.
Yeah. Yeah, we should probably include improv training for chaplaincy.
Oh, totally.
I'm serious. I mean,
I'd love to lead an exercise in this group. just one at some point.
Great. And one of the lovely, but maybe you all know this. One of the rules of improv is never say no. Never shut down anything. Oh, say step forward, say yes to whatever, and then work with it that way.
Yeah. Over the last couple of years before COVID shut it down, I was participating in an improv workshop regularly. Yeah. It was drop-in, and I found it really amazingly inspiring and profound and incredibly aligned with the Dharma.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Because part of it for me is separating these interactions with normal conversation in some sense, because essentially a lot of this is conversational. I think that some of what we're talking about would actually enhance conversation in general. But obviously, going into a chaplaincy situation, there is kind of an agenda. You know, we're trying to connect with this person and help them, and we may not know a lot about them. And with the cohort here, who I know, it's easy to get lost in a conversation just because I'm interested in talking to them. So I'm trying to work on some separation between lapsing into just conversation and really, you know, settling deeper into what we're trying to accomplish here.
Yeah.
I hate to say agenda, but it is kind of an agenda.
Well, this is the task of the chaplain, any chaplaincy encounter, to assess, to figure out what's needed here. Mm-hmm. And what we're offering today is not what you're supposed to do all the time, right? Mm-hmm. It's just one tool that you have in the back pocket, and sometimes this is what's useful. And what you said, it's different, but it's different than this accompanying, you know, that you have talked about so beautifully. So, and some people, they'll go in there, oh, this is the person just to accompany. And we're just going to shoot the breeze, and I'll talk about my family, and they'll talk about their family, and it's just like completely normal. But you have to make that assessment. And for the chaplain, the assessment is always what's beneficial for the person you're with. You're not doing it for your own sake. And if you share about yourself, then it's only for the sake because you think it's useful for them. So if just telling about your family is useful, just shooting the breeze, or telling them that you like the 49ers, only if it's useful. And if you could ask yourself a question, for whose sake am I saying this? And if it's for your own sake, you're starting to get into trouble as a chaplain. So that's what makes it not an ordinary conversation.
Thank you. That's actually very helpful.
What's the last one?
I think if I can share an experience which is somewhat like chaplaincy thing, it happened just two days ago. My wife is a pediatrician, so she, one of her patients, a really lovely patient, you know, has been suffering from cancer and is dying. So I told her, hey, you know, I'm going to doing this chaplaincy training. If you don't mind, I will accompany you. So, and I said, I'm not going to say anything and see how things shape up, right? So at the Stanford Hospital, we went inside to the PICU, pediatric ICU, and so this beautiful kid obviously was in the last stages, so we didn't really have any, I didn't say anything, I just kind of observed, and she was talking to patient's mom. So so at some point she said, you know, they needed space, so she gave me a hint that I need to step out of the room, so I gave some space and came out. It turns out that, you know, after some time, she came and she wanted to talk to me. So when she was ready, she talked to me. Right? So just wanted to share the experience. So nice. It's no agenda. I didn't have an agenda here. So, yeah.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
So thank you for this. And thank you for doing the exercise and sharing yourself and having this. So, you know, this is supposed to be a... Those kinds of conversations are meant to be somewhat confidential. So at lunch or other, you don't want to necessarily, you know, announce to everyone, you know, what just happened. You know, just if you're going to share it or talk about it, ask the person's permission. Or, you know, if you're sitting next to each other and chatting about it, it seems like maybe it seems fine. But be a little bit, because it's a way of caring for each other. The hearts are tender. It's kind of assumed that in the chaplaincy world, the hearts are tender. And so we want to kind of be a little bit careful. And so we'll start again in here at 1:30. And for those of you, for AJ and Sharon, I'll keep this on. I don't see any reason to turn it off. But you do it as you wish. And we'll see you all in an hour. Oh, and for here, in terms of eating, I don't know if it's, is it currently raining? Because not really. And so I think it's, you know, better that we be outside, take off the masks. But if it's raining or too cold or something, if you want to be indoors, it's your choice where you take the masks off. And those, the rest of us, we don't normally do that. We'll figure out some other way. Some of you know, you could eat in that conference room if you want, you know, by yourself, or in the library by yourself if you want, if you don't want to go outside. And or underneath the awning there on the deck. It usually doesn't get wet there too much, maybe for your feet, but it usually dries, so I might go out there or out in the parking lot. So you can take the folding chairs out if you want, and maybe not the tables, I don't know, as you wish. And if you do end up eating in here, you could maybe eat near the hot water dispenser, and we can open those sliding doors all the way, so there's more airflow going on. So hopefully everyone finds a way to make it work. Great, thank you. Thank you.